This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, it is Friday, March 13th, 2020. I hope all of you are taking care of yourselves and of each other. I feel lucky that one of my jobs can be done entirely remotely, where I get to interact with both guests and all of you, but we're also still practicing social distancing since it's all happening on the interwebs and through technology. So if you haven't listened to like my entire back catalog, now's the time, people. We are all, we're all kind of stuck in our houses, many of us. I do want to let you know, for those of you who have been paying attention, my travel has been postponed. And so my workshop at the Pleasure Chest in March, my two workshops at Eva's Boutique in Salem and Eugene, Oregon, have been postponed. And I'll give you details about when those get rescheduled. So in the meantime, there are also big changes happening. Beginning in April, which is just in a few weeks, this bird is ready to leave the nest. Meaning, I'm leaving Voice America and venturing out on my own to independently produce Sex Out Loud as a podcast. What does that mean for you, my intrepid and loyal listeners? Well, if you currently listen to my show via the Voice America app or website, you need to switch to a new platform. But you'll be able to get my podcast anywhere you get podcasts. There will be no more live shows. They're all going to be pre-recorded podcasts from here on out. Change is really hard. But Raymond and I are determined to bring you a revamped, revitalized Sex Out Loud. There could be some technical issues in making a smooth transition, so I'm just warning you. Please hang in there with me. The best thing you can do is subscribe to the podcast wherever you get yours, the Apple Store, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, etc., and then you won't miss a single episode. I really appreciate all of you for listening. So whether you started with me back in 2012 in the very first season of the show, or you just found me today, this is episode number 371, and I can't wait to create 371 more. Check out sexoutloudradio.com and my social media at Tristan Taramino across all platforms for the latest news about the big move. Don't worry, I'm still going to be in your ear holes every week. I am so excited about my guest today, mostly because I have been in this industry for a really long time, and I love talking to people, but more than that, I love learning things. I know a lot of things, people, but I don't know everything. And so I'm really excited to like bring new points of view and perspectives to all of you. But I'm also, I want to gain cultural competency. I want to learn things that are new. I want to acknowledge what hasn't been in my own education. And so no pressure on our guest, but I'm really excited. Let me tell you about her. Angelica Lindsay Ali, aka the Village Auntie, is a certified sexual health educator, researcher, author, wellness coach, and a recognized authority in sexual health, intimacy cultivation in Islamic marriage, and emotional well-being. She is popularly known as the Orgasm Oracle and is known for being a love and sex doula. She teaches women about sexual health and pleasure from both an African and Islamic perspective. With over 20 years of experience in women's wellness, Lindsay Ali draws upon her clinical, cultural, and religious training to educate women about sex and intimacy. Angelica offers workshops and resources on love, intimacy, traditional approaches to sexuality, and feminine gender identity. She facilitates in-person and online rites of passage programs for girls and young women. Angelica hosts the award-winning podcast called Lights On, produced by UK-based Muslim women's media outlet, Amali Magazine. Amalia Magazine. Please welcome Angelica Lindsay Ali. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Thanks so much for being on the show.
I'm super excited.
So you've been in the field for decades. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got into this work?
I started this work as a part of my own personal healing journey. So it was actually right before I became Muslim, 4 months before I took my Shahada to become Muslim. I was having a lot of cramping. I was a professional West African dancer at the time. And one of my dance teachers saw me holding my side during a dance class, and she pulled me to the side and told me that I had a tipped uterus and I needed to bind my belly when I was dancing. And I just looked at her because, for what I knew, she was a middle-aged African woman who was teaching dance. She wasn't a doctor. Mm-hmm. But here she was diagnosing me. She told me a tea that I could drink. So 2 weeks later was my annual gynecology exam, and the doctor told me that I had an inverted uterus and that I needed to make sure that I braced my torso so that it wouldn't, you know, cause any discomfort. And so I called her and said, "What is this that you have told me?" And she said that she was a woman who knows herself, and a woman who knows herself is able to teach other women how to know themselves. And that's what really started me down my pathway towards learning about traditional healing modalities from West Africa. And eventually we started talking about sex, and she taught me a lot about traditional aphrodisiacs and things like that. So that was about, I'm 44, so that was about 21 years ago that I started.
Wow. Wow. What do you think people who aren't familiar with Islam at all misunderstand about Islam and sexuality?
They think that Muslims don't have sex. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how they come to that conclusion, because I know at least 10 women who have more than 6 children each. I don't know if they think like the stork is just like making rapid deliveries to Muslim households, but Muslims, we have sex. And I think a lot of people, they compartmentalize sexuality away from spirituality. And they think that because Muslims tend to be very overtly quote unquote pious or devout, that sexuality doesn't fit into the picture at all, when actually it does. In Islam, sex is an act of worship. It's something that is clearly talked about in Islamic law, Islamic jurisprudence. There are a variety of stories and hadith stories from the life of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that talk about sex. So I think a lot of people feel that this is something that is outside of our purview, when it is very much a part of a daily lived experience for many Muslims.
And also, I think maybe people think, well, the folks who had children had sex to have children, but maybe sex within Islam isn't about pleasure.
Right. And that is the furthest thing from the truth, because pleasure is absolutely prioritized in Islamic relationships. In fact, when we talk about divorce in Islam, it's a very contentious issue. A lot of people say that, you know, Muslim women, you know, they can't get a divorce. And one of the reasons that a woman can seek out divorce, where an Islamic judge, an imam, will like has no say against her, is if she says that her husband is not bringing her sexual pleasure. So if you're married to a man and he's not able to please you sexually, you can seek out a divorce. And the reason for that is because sex is not just for the purpose of utility and procreation. It's also for pleasure. And a woman deserves to have space in her life for pleasure in Islam. firmly stands behind her right to have that.
I love that. And I think that is going to come to as news to folks out there.
Even to some Muslims. Some Muslims don't know that.
Some Muslims. Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Because I think in general, we have this compartmentalization with all kinds of spirituality and religion, right? That sex is just completely devoid from the discussion, from the conversation. It's seen as entirely separate rather than part of someone. You know, someone's faith is part of them, just like someone's sexuality is. Mm-hmm, but we often separate those in Judeo-Christian religions as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have to take our first commercial break. I'm not sure how that happened, except I talked a lot at the beginning. Probably haven't happened. So let's take a break. When we come back, we are going to dig in. That was like a little taste of what we're going to dig into on this show today. So don't go anywhere. Listen to the commercials and we'll be back. Spring is on the way and the Pleasure Chest is ready to help you get sprung. On March 8th, celebrate International Women's Day and get the women in your life a gift. You know, sex toys keep on giving. So what about the LaWand limited edition Feel My Power vibrator, or the popular Womanizer Duo, or the WeVibe Chorus? From March 8th to the 15th, save 10% on all orders $100 and up. Online only, some exclusions apply. On March 22nd, LaWand presents Pleasure Confessional at the West Hollywood store. Step into the confessional booth and tell us your story of empowerment in or outside the bedroom. Win prizes and enjoy exclusive discounts on the empowering LaWand line. There are free sex ed classes throughout the month on everything from strap-ons to Transsex 101, including my class on March 21st. How to Plan a Gangbang at the Upper East Side store in New York City. As always, get great pleasure tips on their Instagram at Pleasure Chest Stores and go to pleasurechest.com for everything you need to celebrate spring.
Hi everyone, Tristan here. Hey, lube makes everything better. Duh. And I mean everything. Vaginal and anal penetration, hand jobs, hand sex, masturbation, fingering, grinding, oral sex. You name it, lube will improve it. When you're choosing a lube, you want one with high quality ingredients. UberLube is silicone with a little vitamin E. That's it. No parabens, no petrochemicals, no strange things you can't pronounce. I have a very sensitive pussy, and that is not a metaphor. It's easily irritated, and plenty of lubes I've tried just do not agree with me. I like UberLube because it's scent-free, flavorless, simple ingredients, and long-lasting. Plus, it's got a pump, which is easy to use and hygienic because you're not always touching the top of it. Oh, and it will not stain clothing or bedding. Any spills can be cleaned up with detergent and water. Right now, UberLube is offering Sex Out Loud listeners a special offer. 10% off and free shipping when you use my code Tristan at uberlube.com. That's 10% off and free shipping. Just use code Tristan at UberLube, UberLube.com. UberLube lets you feel what you want to feel.
Streaming live. The leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I want to shout out my amazing sponsors who make this show possible, the Pleasure Chest. So one good thing that you can do for yourself is go to pleasurechest.com and buy yourself something nice. You don't have to go to the store and touch all the things. You can just go online and get it delivered to you. Also, Uber Lube. Uber Lube is one of the lubes with the least amount of ingredients, which is why I like it so much. It's a silicone-based lube. They sent me a case of it. I'm still going through it. UberLube.com. And the Calm app. If ever any of us needed the Calm app, it's today and in the near future. I don't know about you, but like some nice calming meditations have really helped just with my own anxiety about all the stuff that's going on. So the Calm app is kind of like having a meditation teacher right in your pocket on your phone. It's really fantastic. It's free to download. Check it out. Okay, so I'm talking today with Angelica Lindsay Ali, who's a certified sexual health educator, researcher, author, wellness coach. She's an expert on Islam and sexuality. So you call yourself the village auntie. What is the traditional role of a village auntie?
So in traditional West African societies, actually not just West African societies, also in East Africa, there was always a woman in the village. That she wasn't your mom, but you respected her like your mom. She's like a cool mom. She was a woman who may have had a lot of herbal knowledge. She might be the community midwife. She's the person that you send your daughter to when she starts her menstrual cycle. Before your wedding night, your husband may go to her to help, you know, solve any disputes in the family. She was a trusted source that may not have been related by blood, but she was someone that you could go to for advice. And so I call myself the village auntie because I want to reclaim that role, but in a global digital space where we may not live in communal spaces anymore, I wanted to position myself to be there for people who wanted guidance or advice about issues that might be taboo to talk about within their own families.
Well, what I think is interesting about that is because, you know, there's some talk and debate around higher education, advanced degrees, certification within sex education circles, right? And when people can call themselves doctor, they automatically get this sort of level of credibility that other people don't. And some of those folks, like, don't even have their doctorate in human sexuality. They have it in something else. But the village auntie to me feels like an entirely accessible person, like it that feels more rooted in wisdom and knowledge than in sort of elitist pieces of paper and degrees.
Absolutely. And that's what I wanted it to feel accessible to people because it can be, you know, I am a public health professional. I do have several certifications. I have religious training. I have professional training. I have academic training. But instead of leading with my certifications and this professional knowledge, I wanted to lead with I'm your fictive kin. You know, I'm someone that you can reach out to, you can talk to, because it can be really intimidating. And a lot of the things that people come to me about are issues that are extremely private. There are issues that people have a lot of shame around. And it didn't make sense to me to layer that with, you know, another layer of elitism or arrogance or in any way, shape, or form. So I wanted to level the playing field so that people knew that I was someone that they could access quite easily.
So I read this article about you from Vice, which has the amazing clickbait title.
Yes. This Muslim, I got in trouble for that title.
Okay, yeah. This Muslim sex educator believes God wants us to orgasm.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about that, which is how do you feel about them sort of distilling your message to that?
So the reporter who wrote the story is amazing. She followed the platform for a long time. I have an immense amount of respect for her. And having worked in journalism, I know that she was probably not the person who picked that title, but it's Vice. Like, that's what Vice does. Vice puts titles that make you want to click. I got in a lot of trouble for that because as Muslims, we never want to say that we know what God is thinking or what God wants. But it got a lot of people to pay attention. Lots of nasty messages. I stopped reading the comments. I stopped checking message boards because people were just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe she said that. But if people read the article, I think she did a fantastic job of really talking about what the message is as a whole. But some people, you know, as people are wont to do, they only read the title and they, man, they ripped me a new one around that. And I had to pray about it and just let it go, because mm-hmm. there was nothing that I could do, nothing that she could do. And in fact, when she heard that there were people that were harassing me, she actually reached out to me and said, is there anything that we need to do on our end? So I also want to say that Vice was extremely like open and willing to just provide whatever sources that they could to maintain my safety. So that was important. But, you know, it was just Vice being Vice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people don't realize also that writers often don't pick their own titles. This is also true of books, people, mm-hmm. just so you know.
Like, right.
We are often at the mercy of these marketing people in, you know, at our publishers. Yes. But this begs the question, is your work, is what you do controversial within some Muslim communities?
Absolutely. There are people who think that a woman, so there are people who, they can't really challenge me on the utility of what I talk about, because sex is a part of Islam. Sexual pleasure is important in Islam. Sex education is important in Islam. But the fact that I'm a woman doing it in a very public space, a lot of people challenge that. I do set up guidelines and standards for myself online. So you'll never see nudity on my Instagram page. You'll never see me talk about certain topics publicly. Those are things that I say privately. But even with that, people still just say, well, you shouldn't be talking about this. This is completely inappropriate. Women, you know, you're a married woman, you're a mother. There's no way you should talk about this. And it's interesting because the people who do that are usually congregants or, you know, people who are a part of Muslim communities. I have an extreme amount of support amongst Muslim leaders. So a lot of male and female scholars, imams, people who are heads of organizations, they really support the messaging because they, you know, especially if they're men, they say, this is something that we've wanted to talk about, but it's not appropriate for me as a man to talk to a woman about sexual pleasure. And now we have a space where we can refer women to. So I tend to not focus on the people who try to discredit me as much, because I have that support coming from people who are leaders of the community.
I mean, do you think it's sexism partly?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If I were a man, I would be famous. I would have a New York Times. Honestly, I would have a New York Times bestseller. Like a lot of it is steeped in misogyny. A mm-hmm. lot of it is steeped in misogynoir because I'm a Black woman. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is steeped in phobia about converts because I converted to Islam. I was not born and raised as a Muslim. So lots of people feel that I shouldn't do what I do because I don't really know Islam that well, but they don't know my religious training and my religious background because I don't lead with that. I think I'm comfortable in my position because I know that I'm fortified on all sides. So I don't have to lead with my credentials in order to combat people because I know what I know and I'm comfortable in that. But it absolutely has to do with me being a woman and people pushing back. I had a man tell me that I'm telling women that they're unhappy and that's why their marriages are suffering, rather than these women are already unhappy.
Of course.
That's why they're seeking me out. So it's very interesting how people try to project their own insecurities onto my work.
And I've also noticed in my research that you are essentially an Islamic scholar. I don't know if you consider yourself.
I wouldn't say that just because.
But you know a lot.
I do. I know a lot.
And you can take on people who want to challenge you on that front.
I can. I don't like to. I'm very, my therapist says I'm conflict avoidant, which is true. I can. And I'll go there. Like I'm from Detroit and Detroit, like we talk smack and I can go there. But I'm at a point now in the work where I know what I know. I know that if I don't have the information, I have trusted sources to go to, but I don't call myself an Islamic scholar only because calling yourself an Islamic scholar would be like saying, this is a faulty correlation, but it's the best one I can come up with right now. It would be like me saying I'm a priest or a nun or a minister. Like I'm not, there are people who know so much more than I know who are qualified to be called scholars. But yes, doing this work, I was not comfortable with taking this work public until I was certain that I had a certain amount of religious information. Now that I have that, I have no problem saying anything because anyone who has tried to challenge me publicly has always been shot down.
But in that research and in that work that you've done, have there been things that you've come up against that you feel like you don't agree with, or that challenge you to rethink some things, or that you've had a hard time, you know, wrapping your mind around and embracing easily?
From an Islamic perspective?
Yes.
So, yeah, of course, there are always things that are going to come up. There are things, especially when I had a question from a woman who said, you know, I'm a woman who is same gender loving. Do you think that I also deserve sexual pleasure? And I didn't really have an answer for that, because that was a very personal, very private question that she's asking me in all earnestness. And am I answering as Angelica, or am I answering as the village auntie? I have to still maintain a certain standard when it comes to Islam, but I can speak to her need for closeness and intimacy and partnership, but also understanding that I am a cisgender heterosexual woman. My experience with her particular situation is limited. And so I had to be able to say that. So I come up against these things. Also, you know, there's questions about things like masturbation and, you know, certain types of sex toys and certain types of, you know, sex scenarios. Are these okay? Are these not okay? On the one hand, you know, Islam has very clear guidelines regarding some of these issues, but then there's also this area of nuance and gray area that you have to deal with. So I do find myself at times not answering certain types of questions because I don't feel that I have the expertise or the background for it, or giving people an answer. I've had to become comfortable with giving people uncomfortable answers. And that was challenging me for me at first, but it's become a lot easier because I still have to have a standard. I still have to have a moral standard. And if the grounding that I'm standing on is Islam, then I have to be true to that despite whatever might be my confusions about certain issues.
Okay, so give me an example of an uncomfortable answer.
An uncomfortable answer would be, so I get a question and I said I wasn't going to talk about this, and I'm not really going to go into my answer for it, but I get lots and lots of questions about masturbation. And is masturbation okay? I'm a 34, and this is not a particular person, so I don't want anyone to feel like I'm outing anyone, but you know, I'm a 34-year-old woman. I've never been married. How can you tell me that masturbation is not okay? Now, I never come out and say masturbation is okay or not okay, but she knows what the Islamic rulings are around that. And I have to give the answer that says, sis, I don't make the rules. People come to me sometimes because I'm very disruptive and they think that I will go out on a limb and say something that goes against what Islam says. And I'm very careful about not doing that, because that's when it throws me into this cesspool of people coming at me and arguing with me about certain things. So sometimes I have to say, you have to go back. And so for this person, I said, we had a whole conversation about masturbation. I gave my opinion. I gave, you know, what the Islamic ruling is. I gave what the real life application of this Islamic ruling looks like. And she still wasn't satisfied because I did not tell her exactly what she wanted to hear. And ultimately, I had to say, sister, the best thing that I can do right now is refer you to an Islamic jurist who can break down the finer points of this from a jurisprudence standpoint. And that was an uncomfortable answer because I could not give her the answer that she wanted. And I had to refer her to someone else.
And okay, we have to take a break, but it felt uncomfortable to you. Mm-hmm. Did you ever feel like by this very answer, I'm sort of negating what she wants, which I think my feeling here is she wanted some kind of just witness and acceptance.
Right. She wanted me to say that what she wanted to do, and it wasn't just basic masturbation, it was a whole other, you know, area. She wanted me to say that it was okay. She was mm-hmm. looking for an ally. And in that moment, I could not be that ally for her because it was a very nuanced and complex issue.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to take another break.
Okay.
Hear from our sponsors. We dove into that water, which we weren't going to dive into, but
right.
We'll talk about it on the break. Okay. Yeah. Cause you know, I like everything to be consensual here. I did not try to back you into that corner. So let's take a break and more with the village auntie when we get back. Hey listeners, Tristan here.
Have you been hearing the word mindfulness a lot lately? I mean, I seem to see it everywhere in the media, on book covers. It's seemingly everywhere. Here's the thing. It's not just a trend. Mindfulness actually works. For me, practicing mindfulness and meditation has improved every area of my life. Really. But maybe you can't make it to a group or read a book or go to a class. No worries. Just download the app that I use, Calm. Calm is the number one app for sleep, relaxation, and meditation, and over 60 million people use it. Calm has sleep stories, which are like bedtime stories for grown-ups, and they can help you fall into a deep, natural sleep in minutes. Stories are narrated by iconic voices like LeVar Burton and Nick Offerman. They also have soothing music from artists like Sam Smith. There are guided meditations, breathing exercises, and so much more to help you relax and de-stress. For my listeners, Calm is offering a special limited-time promotion of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/Tristan. That's 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library with new content added every week. Get started by going to calm.com/Tristan. That's calm.com/Tristan. Relax, de-stress, and find your peace with Calm.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I'm talking with Angelica Lindsay Ali. And one of the things that you said, oh, I forgot to give out the phone number. Because Andrew didn't remind me, and that's his job, right, Andrew? The phone number, if you want to call us and ask Angelica a question, or you can also put it on our feed, our Twitter feed at Sex Out Loud Radio. It's 323-SEX-8266. I don't know why that wasn't in the script. That's my fault. Okay, so if you want to ask us a question, tweet at us or call that number. Angelica, you work from a framework of traditional West and East African societies when you do your sex education, when you do coaching, when you do workshops on intimacy and approaches to sex. And I think, you know, what many people are familiar with is a very Western notion of sex education. And so where are some of the departure points that you've seen as someone who knows kind of both traditions?
So I think sexuality is a lot more open and a lot more freeing, even in terms of like body positivity. So I got the shock of my life the first time I went to Ghana. We drove past a village and we stopped there for lunch or what have you. And there were women walking around bare chested. And it just literally blew my mind. This was in 1997. And just the idea that women could be so free, you know, people weren't objectifying them because of their breasts. One of the women said, it's just food for kids. Like, it was just the complete comfort. And there were women who, you know, their nipples weren't pointing forward. They were pointing down. And everyone was just, there was just this freedom and comfort with the female body that I had not known up until that point. Right up until I met a woman from Uganda who started to train me in Kunyaza. Kunyaza is a traditional East African art. It really is an art of female ejaculation. And the fact that this is something in Uganda, Rwanda, Kenya, even parts of Tanzania, being able to cause a woman to squirt or to ejaculate is something that is a test of a man's virility. And the fact that these are things that are talked about on the radio. You have senghas who go around to schools and teach people this, people in the village where sex and sexual pleasure is such a priority. It's such a departure from the hypersexualized society that we have here in America. We put a lot of things out in the forefront as if we're sexually liberated or sexually aware, very conscious. But in reality, there's a commodification of sex and a lack of education. Whereas in a West African and East African framework, from a traditional framework, because a lot of those societies currently, you know, take after Western societies, American and European societies, but from a traditional framework, there was a lot more openness and freedom in talking about sex and sexual pleasure. There wasn't a lot of shame and stigma attached to it.
That's fascinating, because I do think of Western society as sort of oversaturated with sexual imagery, but mm-hmm. then there's a total lack of sexual information, right? There's
absolutely.
The knowledge is kind of being withheld, especially from young people.
Absolutely.
So there's more openness. And would you also say that, like, there's more, I mean, I think one of the, like, learning tools that you use is clearly a kind of, like, woman to woman, like, one-on-one mm-hmm. education model. Would you say that's also part of having its roots in African culture?
Absolutely. It has its roots in African culture. It also has its roots in Islam. Women were the portals of education for other women. In Islam, it's said that the first schoolhouse is your mother's lap. And even if you go, when I go to visit my in-laws in Ghana now, there are spaces where the women sit and they drink tea and they talk. And the men know you cannot go in that room. If the aunties and grandma are in that room talking, you don't enter that space. And if you're a woman of a certain age, you're not yet married, you're still a preteen, you also can't go into that room, because this is a dissemination of information from woman to woman. And that's why I keep my, I don't know if you noticed on my Twitter, on my Instagram, I say that men can watch, but I don't want men to engage, because I want to keep that same idea of a woman to woman form of education. I've modernized it because we're doing it on the internet, but it is very much hearkening back to women sitting under a baobab tree, just talking woman to woman, person to person.
And so this begs a question, as, like, Western society intervenes, although gender diversity has been happening throughout time in all cultures, mm-hmm. Has there been pushback for you on who qualifies as a woman, how you define womanhood, given that our language has evolved and expanded so much around gender?
Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, I have not gotten any pushback at all. And I think it's because of the way that I approach the work. So when I do a general admission workshop, I open it and I say that this is for women. I don't put qualifiers on top of it. This is for women. So I've had workshops where I have people who have said, you know, I'm cisgender, but I consider myself non-binary. But I want to come to your workshop and see what it's all about. Okay, it's at a college campus. Come, sit, no problem. Once they actually see what I talk about, they see that this message is applicable across the board to a variety of people, because it's not really about a gender-based notion. I talk to women because I think that women are highly underrepresented in these types of conversations, but I have not gotten a lot of pushback from people who consider themselves genderqueer, non-binary, you know, gender non-affirming. I haven't gotten a lot of pushback from that, because I think at the core of my message is really a love of self and a self-knowledge. And it's not rooted in specific genitalia necessarily. So lots of people, the message resonates with a lot of people. And I work in public health. My day job is in public health. So I work with people who are gender and sexual minorities. And I've gone to them and said, hey, look, I am a heterosexual cisgender woman putting myself out there with the sex education message. What part of this bothers you? And I had people say, it doesn't bother me because you lead with that. There's no presumption that you're speaking for my community. You're speaking from your experience, and we can appreciate that, because I cede space to people to speak about their experience. And I don't say, well, you're not a woman. You're a man. You're this, you're that. When I'm in a public space like that on the internet, lots of people consume this information and they find from it what they need to. I can market it towards a particular group, but the fact that lots of people get benefit from it is something that I think is good.
Well, yeah, and I think this has been true for many things, which is that often things are marketed towards women, but their partners also become interested in the information, which is also very useful to them.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
In terms of basic ideas about bodies, about pleasure, about sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And that also seems like a unique piece of your work, which is that you don't always just talk about sex in broad strokes. You actually talk about the nitty-gritty how-tos.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because I was a classroom teacher for many years, and I realized how many people just don't know how to have good sex. Sex at its root is just mechanics, right? All different types of sex. You know, you put something here, this part goes in this part rubs up against this part, what have you, sex happens. But people don't understand the complexity of our bodies and the ways in which we can maximize pleasure. So I do. I give tutorials. I had a whole thing about milking the prostate externally. I talk about different types of orgasms. And there's a limit to what I will talk about on social media. But when it comes to talking about sex how-tos and sort of tips and you know, step one to step five, I'm very open about that because these are questions. I try to anticipate what types of questions people have and answer them before they get a chance to ask them.
Right, right. Okay, we're going to take another break. I want to remind you folks that you can call us. This is your final chance to call us. And you're going to call us at the right number, which I'm going to give you is 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. Or you can tweet us at Sex Out Loud Radio. When we come back, we're going to continue this discussion. So stay put. Spring is on the way, and the Pleasure Chest is ready to help you get sprung. On March 8th, celebrate International Women's Day and get the women in your life a gift. You know, sex toys keep on giving. So what about the LaWand limited edition Feel My Power vibrator or the popular Womanizer Duo or the WeVibe Chorus? From March 8th to the 15th, save 10% on all orders $100 and up. Online only, some exclusions apply. On March 22nd, LaWand presents Pleasure Confessional at the West Hollywood store. Step into the confessional booth and tell us your story of empowerment in or outside the bedroom. Win prizes and enjoy exclusive discounts on the empowering LaWand line. There are free sex ed classes throughout the month on everything from strap-ons to Transsex 101, including my class on March 21st. How to Plan a Gangbang at the Upper East Side store in New York City. As always, get great pleasure tips on their Instagram at Pleasure Chest Stores and go to pleasurechest.com for everything you need to celebrate spring.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, if you want to call us, you can. 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. I'm talking today with Angelica Lindsay Ali, aka the Village Auntie, who is a certified sexual health educator, researcher, author, wellness coach, expert on sex and Islam. So over on the Twitters, you know, Raymond live tweets the show and he quotes the guests. And he says that the tweet that's getting the most attention, the most likes, and the most retweeting is this one. In Islam, sex is an act of worship.
Yes.
So maybe you can expand on that because that seemed to really hit people.
So sex is it is an act of worship. It's so deep that when two people come together in order to engage in sex, there's a prayer that is said. For any progeny that might be the result of that interaction. It is a way of recognizing the power and ability of our bodies. And it is an acknowledgement of sex as a sacred act, something that is not to be entered into lightly. It is something that gives us rights and responsibilities to and for each other. So I think that people don't understand the importance of sex. And this is also a big reason why Islam pushes, because, you know, premarital sex in Islam is a no-no. We know that there are Muslims who engage in it, just as all human beings do. But this is one of the strong pushes for marriage and for the encouragement for people to engage in marriage, because it's not just to build families. It's also to be able to experience this beautiful sacred act, this beautiful act of worship that otherwise you might not have access to.
Which also is part of the prioritizing of pleasure, right?
Absolutely.
To prioritize experiencing pleasure with your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that I think some, well, let's just call them out, Catholics and Christians, just don't, just would never think of that, of any discussion of pleasure, which is partly why sex education in America is so sort of fucked, because we just, we don't want to discuss the pleasure piece of the equation.
We don't. And you know, I think it scares people, because people think if you learn that sex is pleasurable, you're going to want to go out and have a bunch of it, rather than if you learn that sex is pleasurable, it's something that you're going to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that you can, you know, because marriage, to be honest, I've been married for 15 years. Marriage does not sound like fun. If I was not already married, I would not want to get married. Because we don't make... I wouldn't. We don't make, like, marriage sounds like oppression. It sounds like, oh my gosh, one person for the rest of my life. This is terrible. Because we don't talk about all of the different ways that you can engage in sex with your partner. Sex education is also protection. You know, there's a big push against sex education in schools, but I am a mother of four, and starting at the age of four, my children start getting, you know, basic education about their bodies, because it's protection. You need to know how your body naturally responds, instead of, you know, dimming that. This is how people develop, you know, sexual fetishes that are unhealthy mentally, because they've been suppressing this appetite for pleasure their whole lives, and it starts to manifest in ways that might not be the healthiest for them or their partner. So I am fully on board with education, and not just education for utility, but talking about how much fun sex actually is, because we've zapped the joy out of the interaction.
We have. Okay, so I want to talk about your book. Your book is called Passage, A 31-Day Guided Journey. Tell me about it.
So Passage was a book that I, at first, was just going to write for me. 2020 was starting. I'm 44. I'm fully into, like, middle age. I'm entering into menopause. I'm going through a second puberty. I feel like I'm losing my mind. And my manager said, well, you know, if you're writing this journal for yourself, because I said I'm going to take 30 days and just reset my mind. She said, if you're doing this for yourself, do you think that some other women might be able to benefit from it? And I said, well, no, you know, I don't know. I'll just put some stuff together and we'll see. And slowly but surely, it just came together. And it's not a sex book. A lot of people expected my first book to be a sex book. But the Village Auntie movement really isn't about sex. It's about self-love. It's about spirituality. It's about self-care, community. And that's what the book is based on. So I built it around four themed weeks. It could also be, a friend of mine said that it's too much to do in a week. So she's going to take a quarter. She's going to break the book up into a year.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about recognition, recognizing the negative pathways that we have as human beings and the toxic patterns in our lives. Reclamation. I'm a huge fan of reclamation. What are those cultural values and ideas that we need to shed and trash? And what are the ones that we have lost sight of that we need to reclaim? The third segment is reflection, looking at the ways in which, now that we've gotten rid of toxic patterns and unhealthy traditions, what are some ways that we can incorporate positive pathways into our lives? And then the last section is rebirth. So celebrating the new patterns that we've created, the new ideas, the new people that we have become. And in the book, I talk about being a survivor of sexual assault and what that looked like for me, having to rebuild self-love after that sexual trauma. I talk about body positivity, how I had to learn to love my body through all of its different manifestations, and how, you know, that has been a slippery slope, but how I finally come to a point of balance and equilibrium. There are recipes in there. It's a mind, body, soul guide. So we talk about not just healing your mental and focusing on your spiritual self, but also what are the types of foods that we're eating? How are we feeding ourselves? I put some aphrodisiac love baths in there, you know, because I had to put a little sex something in there. But it's something that is meant to be a workshop in a book. So lots of women all over the world follow the Village Auntie movement, but they're in places like Uzbekistan. I don't know that I'll ever go to Uzbekistan, but I want to be able to reach people who are there. So the book is a portable guide for them to sort of get a peek into what the Village Auntie is all about.
And I want to clarify for listeners that a lot of your work can speak to people of all faiths and religions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was raised a Christian. I was raised in the church until I was 23 years old and became a Muslim. One of my closest friends is Jewish. I have friends who practice African, like who practice every different religion. So while I always say I speak as a Black Muslim woman, but anyone can access this information. I have men who have bought the book and have called me in tears like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that I needed this in my life. I'm like, oh, that's great, but just don't reach out to me on Twitter. Like, you know, anybody can access this information. It's not just for people who are Muslim. It's for people who are human.
And you talked about your kids briefly. I'm wondering what you would have wanted young Angelica to know. If you could go back, you know, on the brink of becoming a sexual person, what would you want her to know that you didn't know then?
I would want her to know that it's okay to enjoy sex, that sexiness has less to do with what you look like and more to do with how you feel about yourself. I would want that Angelica to know more about her body because I had no idea. And I would want that Angelica to know that sex is something that you can be an active participant in. It doesn't have to be something that happens to you. I think a lot of women in heterosexual relationships, sex is something that we're duty bound. It's something that we do for the other person. And I definitely had that idea as a young person that sex was something, a gift that I gave to another person rather than an experience that I could also find mutual benefit in as well.
Mm-mm. I mean, I think all those are so important. And I think back all the time about kind of what I wish, you know, what I would tell young people today that I just didn't know. Mm-hmm. And it's, I feel like it transcends also age and generation. You know, like I've taught people in my workshops who are 18 and people who are 70. And for the most part, you know, a small percentage of people walk in the door to one of my workshops and say, I had amazing sex education growing up. And my parents were so open about it. And I learned all these things, you know, the majority of folks just didn't. And so there's a sense of like relearning that we've all got to do.
Absolutely. And my mother is a clinical psychologist. I grew up with my mother in grad school and we had a very sex positive household and I still had severe gaps in my knowledge and information. My mother is the type of person, even today, she says, I don't know why people are coming to you. You're the auntie. I'm the mama. They need to come to me and ask me questions. But you know, she's always been very, very open, but there was that shame about asking her questions. So I had a lot of real gaps in information that I didn't really come to until I was, even as recently as my mid-30s, there were things that I was still discovering about sex in my body.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's kind of a lifelong, right? It's
absolutely.
And I think as someone who's like post-menopause, there are things that I'm discovering about my body that I didn't know that were possible and also that I never thought, you know, would happen once I had such a different kind of libido and an aging body, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That's my next frontier. Menopause.
That's your next frontier. Yes. I'm so glad to hear that. Okay, so people can find you on the web at the.village.auntie. period, my Shopify, period, com.com. Oh, did I say dot? I said it's a dash. The-village-auntie.myshopify.com. You're on Instagram and Twitter at Village Auntie and on Facebook, The Village Auntie. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a great conversation.
I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Andrew, my engineer, everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, same time, same place for another edition of the show. Until then, catch me on social media across all platforms at Tristan Taramino. The show is on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. And between now and then, take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.